Welcome to the Membership Guys Podcast. Kick-ass advice and tips for membership site owners.
What's up, everyone? Thanks for downloading episode 64 of the Membership Guys Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Morrison, one half of the Membership Guys. And if you're running or planning to start a membership website, then you're in the right place. This show is for you. On today's show, I'm joined by Colin Gray from thepodcasthost.com. Now, Colin, as well as helping other people to become successful with podcasting, is also a PhD in online education. So I'm really excited to get Colin on the show to share some of his insight and experience around how to create educational content in order to help us all make our membership content better, as well as the content that we use in our marketing, such as blogs, podcasts, and videos. It was a very good chat, lots of actionable stuff coming out of it. So you're going to want to grab a pen and paper for this one, because I guarantee you'll be taking plenty of notes. So without further ado, I'm going to jump right now into my chat with Colin Gray. On today's show, I'm joined by Colin Gray, founder of thepodcasthost.com, where he and his team provide education and services for podcasters. He's also a public speaker, having just returned from presenting at ProBlogger in Sydney. We've just caught him coming out of jet lag, and just an all-round top guy. Colin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Yeah, not feeling too jet lagged anymore. I've kind of caught up, but keep falling asleep at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I think I'm still feeling the jet lag from an event I went to last year. So, yeah, who knows? All right. So, obviously, you know, mentioned in the intro that you work a lot with podcasters. You teach them how to set up and get the best on their podcast, as well as help them with editing, with production. But the one thing I didn't mention in there is, while that's essentially your day job, you also, was it last year, completed a PhD in online entrepreneurial education. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was my, it's kind of how I got into podcasting originally. Was I worked in higher education for about 5 or 6 years. And that kind of, that work was in online education. So I taught lecturers how to teach better online. So how to use any kind of technology to help their students to learn. And that led into the PhD, which I started back in 2012. So yeah, I was doing that alongside running the podcast host at the time.
Wow. So we have a legitimate doctor of online education in the house.
Indeed. There you go. I don't tend to advertise it too
much. I was going to say, when you get that call at the restaurant, is there a doctor here? Hopefully you're not raising your hand for that one.
No. I'm always torn on planes, like whether to put it on, because you think, oh, it might get me an upgrade, but actually I don't really want them to call me if somebody has a heart attack halfway over the Atlantic. So
yeah, I have that when I attended a friend's wedding, and they bought all of their guests a lord and ladyship, where you basically own 1 square inch of land in Scotland.
Oh, nice.
So I it's not quite the same as with the doctor thing, but I do wonder whether I should put Lord Mike Morrison on my airplane tickets for the same reason.
See if I can. Certainly should, yeah.
Yeah, I'll carry around a photograph of the square inch of land that I own. All right, well, I want to dive a little bit deeper into the online education side of things, if that's okay, because the majority of our audiences, of course, they have memberships, and their memberships have a huge e-learning element. So I can't not take advantage of the opportunity to speak to someone who has, you know, completed education to such a high level in that very specific area. When it comes to teaching people online, what would you say are the biggest mistakes, the ones that really top the list for you that you see people making?
Yeah, there's loads, but yeah, let's talk a few of the top ones. Really, one of the biggest ones that people always make at the start is try to put too much in. So people start planning out a course, and I've done this in the past as well. See, all the time with what we're working with, whereby they start to think about something they want to teach, and they worry about not including enough. Yeah. When really, to make a course effective, if we think about the aims we have here, what we want to do when we're teaching somebody is to help them attain a certain skill. Obviously, common sense, you actually want to teach them something, but really, they don't want to learn something for the sake of learning something generally. They want to learn something to achieve a particular aim. So your aim as a teacher isn't actually to teach somebody something, it's to help them to achieve an aim that they have.
Yeah.
And the problem is when you start creating a course, you start to think, oh, so I want to teach this, I want to teach this, but this is related as well. I'm kind of afraid I'm going to be charging for this, so I want to make sure I'm putting tons of value in, so I'll put that in as well, I'll put that in as well. And you end up with something that has so many different aims in it that actually it's really hard to help them achieve any of them because they're so different. They're all so varying. The best way you can create a course is to make it really deep rather than really wide. Mm. And by that, I mean actually breaking it right down to one thing. So thinking about that particular aim that somebody has and designing every element of that course, every part of that course towards achieving that one aim. And there's all sorts of scientific educational terms around all this stuff, but it's really just, it's about the whole purpose of it is, you know, you start with one lesson, that leads to the next lesson, that leads to the next lesson. Each of these has one particular learning outcome that you have, you know, you want to teach them that one little thing, and each of these outcomes lead towards that particular aim at the end. So that's one of the biggest ones. It's people not cutting it down so that people know, so that the learner knows exactly what they're going to achieve at the end of this course, and therefore they know why they should take it, why they should keep going with it, why they should complete that course, and what they're going to get out of it at the end.
Yeah, and I'm sure that our listeners are nodding their heads throughout everything you're saying there, because yeah, of course, with whether it's online courses or with memberships, you're talking about the aims of that content. But you know, if you're thinking about, well, I need to make sure that it's commercially viable, I need to make sure that it's substantial, or there's enough stuff to justify the price tag. That's a lot of aims that have nothing to do with your student.
Yeah.
And I think it's certainly something we see all the time with memberships. And like you say, you know, we're a little bit guilty of that ourselves sometimes as well. You know, it becomes more about what you want to teach than what the student needs to learn.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. But I mean, that's one of the benefits of a membership site, actually, because you change from, and this is something we're looking at just now with our podcasting courses, is changing from, you know, one-off purchase courses to a range of courses all within one membership. So suddenly you go from having a course that you're selling from $200, $200, whatever it is, to having them all under one membership. So you don't feel like you have to put, you don't feel the pressure so much to make it big just to justify the cost. You can put in a tiny little course that's only, say, 3 videos, but it's got a really targeted aim that people can achieve. And that sits well in a membership, I think.
Definitely. And I think, you know, when you're talking about that outcome of that solution that your customer is wanting, when it is that course, the pressure to actually deliver on a bigger transformation with that course is obviously it's going to be a lot bigger. Yeah. Whereas obviously with a membership, you're not having to get that transformation in one single piece of content.
And
I know with our membership at Membersite Academy, the biggest thing we have is the membership roadmap, and that's basically just a navigational tool through other pieces of content. It's not even a piece of content itself. So you're tying together all these little courses or resources or articles and stuff like that. So if someone who's listening has had their membership up and running for a while, or maybe they've been selling one-off courses and they're worried that perhaps they've got the structure wrong or the approach wrong, maybe they haven't been thinking of things in terms of facilitating the end result that their user wants, what can someone do to almost audit their content or make little improvements? Is there any kind of quick wins or small adjustments you can make to improve existing content?
Yeah. There's two things spring to mind in terms of those quick wins. You've got So another mistake I think that a lot of people make is assuming that video is always best because it's seen as the high quality, you know, if you want a really professional course, you have to make it a video, and people often just end up, you know, spending 2 or 3 days recording a bunch of video. And that's great. Like, video does work really well in certain circumstances, but it is not always the best solution. Mm. Sometimes actually, the main problem that video has is that it's a full attention medium. So people have to sit down, they have to concentrate on this video, and therefore you struggle to get people to to watch a video for more than, you know, 5-10 minutes at a time, it's quite often they'll get distracted. So when you've got a course, which is, you know, 2 hours worth of video, the completion rate on that type of course is just horrible. It's just really, really low because people rarely actually watch through the whole series. Whereas if you think about your course, break it down into those segments, use video for bits that really need the visual elements, but then actually create some audio accompaniments as well. So you maybe have some longer lessons which are in audio, then they can be listened to out and about. So you allow people to download them, or you have, you know, some kind of a feed that they can subscribe to into their podcasting apps, that type of thing. Then that's great, because then they can go out, they can listen to it in the car when they're walking the dog, you know, they're doing all sort of washing the dishes, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then you get that attention and people can actually consume longer material over, you know, sort of in the context that suits them, basically. And then add to that as well text, like the much maligned word on paper, or well, screen, I suppose. It's difficult, actually, because if you had somebody that signed up for a course, they paid £200 for a course, and they just saw it was just pages and pages of text, then they'd probably feel pretty gypped. But in a lot of cases, in most cases, text is actually more effective than video or audio, because people can consume it in their own way. Video and audio, the disadvantage of both of them together is that it's paced. So people have to consume it at the pace that somebody delivers the video, delivers the audio.
Yeah.
It's very hard to skim through, to go back and find a bit that you just, you know, 2 minutes ago that you went over. Whereas with text, you know, you can just, your eyes can run over the page. You can find the bits that are relevant to you. You can skip over bits really easily that you already know. You can go back and revise bits that, you know, you didn't quite understand. Text is a really flexible medium for learning. And it's why, you know, there's tons of, I mean, that's what most of the learning materials you find in universities are these days. So a quick win for me is actually to go back through, look at your course and see, start to think more smartly about the mediums. Think, I've got a video here, but actually could I create maybe a bit of a longer audio that supports that people can listen to it and about? Could I create some text that actually gives a summary of that people can go back and revise after they've, you know, deep learned in the video? That's one of the big things for me, because people tend to just pick a medium and stick to it and not bring the variety in.
Yeah, and of course, you know, if someone's actually created the videos, then there are software options that aren't too complicated to strip the audio from those videos. So absolutely, they already have that audio there. And certainly that was one of the first requests we got when we started putting up our video courses, was, can we have the audio?
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, we've actually just recently gone through all the non walkthrough content, where, you know, someone listening to the audio of a technical demonstration isn't really going to benefit from it. But for all the other stuff, the theory stuff that actually doesn't need the video element to it to be useful, you know, we've just done a full run through of our content and stripped out all the audio individually. And I think this was actually on your suggestion, bundled those all together as well in a single zip file that people can just download and load up as a playlist as well. So, and you're absolutely right. And it's funny this is kind of segueing a little bit into podcasting. We don't have transcripts for our podcasts, the Membership Guys podcast, but in speaking to Callie the other day, we both said that we are both far more likely to read a transcript on a website than listen to a podcast episode, because of the convenience, because, like you said, the speed of being able to skim through it and all of that. So it's funny how I think your instincts on what to create often go against the way that you consume.
What you think would be effective, definitely.
So I mean, that's something that anyone who is using video for their membership can do right away after this podcast. If you have courses that could work very well as audio, you can strip those out, and you could even, you know, on the tech side of things, just pay a service like rev.com or Speechpad to transcribe those, to give you a starting point to actually, you know, put in some sort of accompanying text. I think some of the fear around doing that, or some of the reasons why people will do embedded video instead of downloadable audios and text that can be copied and pasted, is this fear of people joining, taking everything from your membership and then cancelling and doing a runner. But we've covered on a past episode, which we'll link to on the show notes on this page, why that is something you shouldn't
worry about.
Yeah.
It's something you shouldn't let affect the actual creation of content.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's reducing the user experience for the people that are going to stick around, isn't it? Because
Absolutely.
You're not offering them everything that they want, making it as easy as possible for them, just for the sake of the few people that are going to pop in and steal everything anyway, no matter what you do.
Absolutely. And, you know, the likelihood is even if someone does come in and steal everything, someone with that mentality probably isn't going to implement what they've stolen anyway.
Yeah.
So you can kind of feel a little bit smug about that, I think.
Yeah. I imagine as well, I'm sure you teach the same thing, but if you're certainly as a teacher, I used to work with a lot of lecturers that used to worry about their jobs when we were bringing in technology. They're
right.
Like, well, you're bringing in virtual learning environments so that you can get rid of all the lecturers and just robots will teach, you know, all this nonsense. And I was like, do you know what? If you think that the biggest value that you're offering is in the static content that you're creating, then there's something far wrong with you,
yeah.
Or you're not a very good teacher.
Yeah.
As I suppose in a membership site, it's the same thing. Your courses are great. They're support resources. They'll give a lot of value to your users, but it's got to be the live stuff, isn't it? It's got to be the, you know, the other things that you're offering in terms of access to you, the live sessions that you're offering, the, you know, the management. In fact, I can talk about a lot of the things I was thinking about talking to you about around sort of timescales and accountability and implementing habits of learning and all that kind of stuff. That's all live things that are long-term, not just one-off. They can't be stolen, so...
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if it was purely just about the content, then schools and universities around the world would just have cubicles where they put students in with a textbook.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would be it. There'd be no teachers.
Yep.
Although, yeah, there may be robots teaching if those fears come.
Yeah.
So obviously this is all stuff that can apply to the content that we put out there, both publicly with blogs, videos, and podcasts, as well as within our membership.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, podcasting is a big thing we do. It's something that is a major part of how we market our membership. And obviously that's your world, that's your life, your obsession, podcasting.
Yeah.
And that's through thepodcasthost.com, where you have courses and you're teaching people about podcasting, you speak about podcasting, workshops, all that sort of stuff, as well as providing the production and the editing. With your doctor's hat still on,
mm-hmm.
How does podcasting compare as an educational vehicle or medium or format to blogging and other forms of content? Do you see podcasting as being better than or the best or the better middle of the road content medium compared to others? Or is it just something you're a particular fan of and decide to build your business around?
Yeah, it's just different. I think we've covered this a little bit already. It's great in certain contexts, and it's brilliant in the context of long form content because, like I said, the attention you get on video is pretty low. You know, the stats are sort of like 3 to 5 minutes or something on YouTube, and similar with text, people just skim through text often. Text is good as a revision tool, or people do learn from textbooks and books, but a podcast allows you to basically learn while you're in wasted time, I guess. That's what I love about it. The fact that you can be driving in the car, you can be washing the dishes, you can be mowing the lawn, whatever it is, you can be listening to a podcast. So for me, it's where you engage people. It's where you put out a bit of your own personality, about your own values. You know, you show who you are, which builds that relationship, that one-to-one with the listener. Audio is great at one-to-one as well because it just feels really personal because you're hearing just that voice. You're getting it straight into your head through the headphones. The presenter tends not to be worrying so much about, you know, things like appearance and technology and backgrounds and all the stuff that goes into video.
That's a big one for us.
Yeah. So there's all that visual element just disappears, and the presenter can just be far more honest and transparent and themselves. They can just act like themselves. They can just be less nervous. And all of that goes together to create a medium that for me is the most engaging out there. So I think that podcasting creates the biggest engagement, which leads to the biggest trust, which actually leads to sales at the end of the day, if that's what you're looking for. Or if it's learning, it leads to consumption, because when you're trying to teach somebody something, it's about them being engaged in what you're saying, what you're teaching. It's about them buying into you as a person, knowing what you're talking about, and them sticking around long enough to actually consume what it is you're giving out. So whether it's sales or whether it's education you're looking for, I think podcasting's the sort of top of that engagement heap. And it's got downsides as well compared to video and text, but that's where I think it stands by itself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of podcasts, and we actually, when we set up our podcast, it was more of a vanity exercise in some ways.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I'm fond of the sound of my own voice. I used to run a little online radio station for Total Nerds back in the mid-2000s. So okay. It was an opportunity to do the whole stick a mic in front and in front of my face and just ramble on. But yeah, we actually, like, when it started, it was so inconsistent. I think we launched with like 5 episodes. Episode 6 was maybe 10 days later. Episode 7, 2 weeks later. Episode 8 was like 2 or 3 days later. So it was just whenever I got a bee in my bonnet and something to talk about.
That's pretty standard.
Yeah. But then all of a sudden, when we opened the doors to you at Membersite Academy, and we were asking people where they found us, there was a surprising amount of people who had found us from the podcast. And these were people who weren't previously in our audience. So, you know, that kind of lit a fire under me a bit to actually take it seriously and, let's actually put a little bit of thought into this. And
good stuff. Yeah, I mean, the thing that people often fall down with on podcasting is that they assume that that's a place to be found. For me, it's not really a place to be found. You can be found there. It gets you into more search engines. So, I mean, you get into iTunes, Stitcher, all the different ones. But the proportion of people searching in those places for new content is tiny compared to the proportion of people searching on YouTube, on Google for just plain text search or even YouTube. YouTube's massive now as well, obviously. So they're really the search platforms. And podcasting is the engagement platform. So I think it works. You try and snare people in with the text, with good text content. So that could be accompaniments to your podcast. It could be, you know, a blog post that outlines what you talk about in the podcast, or it could be a video that's a highlight reel of the podcast maybe. And then you direct them towards the podcast as that next step of engagement. Once they've bought into you a little bit, you've gained a wee bit of trust through the blog, you've gained a wee bit of more trust through the video, then you convince them, because often it's a barrier for people to subscribe to a podcast because there's a big proportion of folk out there that still don't listen on a regular basis. So once you build that trust, you get them onto the podcast, and that's really where you turn them from, you know, casual readers or even regular readers into fanatical fans.
Yeah, for sure. And I think when it comes to membership site owners as well, because so many membership sites are built around authority or personality.
Yeah.
So, you know, especially if you're in a niche where there's numerous different options people can take to fulfill their educational needs. And this is coming back to what you were saying before. If it's just about the material, if it's just about the information, then with the internet, with all the books under the sun that have been published on every possible topic, that's not going to be enough. So I think something like podcasting allowing you to, you know, flavor the content with your own personality, with your own opinions and putting your own spin on things, it's certainly something that we get a lot of positive feedback on.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it still surprises me that anybody can actually listen to the show with my accent, because I still, for as much as I've tried to soften the Geordie accent, it's I don't know if I could listen to someone with my accent on the podcast, but hey, not to discourage people from the show.
I've heard far broader Geordie accents, don't worry.
A couple of drinks in me and you'll definitely hear a much, much broader Geordie accent. Now, we both attended Content Marketing Academy conference back in June this year, and we saw Mark Schaefer talk, big fan of. Now, Mark's coined this term content shock in response to the sheer volume of content that's out these days. Now, podcasting, I'm sure you would agree, is in the thick of this major resurgence. It was big, and then all of a sudden it sort of wasn't quite as cool, but now everyone's doing it and everyone's consuming and all of that. But the podcast is in our audience. What can people do to make sure their show stands out with all this content that is out there and doesn't just get lost in the shuffle?
Yeah, I think a big part of this is another one of those big mistakes that people make actually when they're first creating either courses or podcasts or anything like blogging, video, whatever. It's not taken that a design-led approach, basically, which means not so much, not the traditional way that people think of a design as in visuals and graphic design, that type of stuff, but design-led as in basically customer-led, user-led. So thinking about the users the whole time through it. And it's all the, I mean, everybody's heard of, you know, ideal listeners, about avatars, about personas. And it's really about thinking through that sort of that three-part definition of your content, of your podcast. So whenever we're working with people on creating a podcast, we always get them to think first about what's the big problem you're solving. So think about your customers, think about your listeners, think about your audience. What is the biggest problem that they're experiencing right now? And to be really design-led here, you need to speak to people. You can't just sit there and assume it. You can't just assume that you know. You might well know your customers really, really well, but you go out and speak to them, find 10, 15, 20 of them and actually talk to them in person if possible. But I mean, online, fine as well. Even just surveys gives you a bit of an insight. Find out those problems, find out the language they state it in as well. And once you've got that down, that's a big hook in the first place. Then obviously you want to talk about the solution. So what is it that they're aiming to do that this problem's stopping them doing? So state what the solution is. And then finally, you've got the uniqueness of it. So why you are uniquely served to solve this for them, you know, why they should listen to yours amongst all the other shows. And I think if you can state those three things really clearly to yourself, make sure you know exactly what your show is about, that problem, solution, uniqueness, fit, and you manage to tie that into your title and into your description, and also into the first, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds of every single show that you put out there, you've got to state that every single time. That's your mission. That's, you know, the selling point of your show. Then that makes a huge difference, because I mean, there's all sorts of ways to be found. You know, we could talk discoverability and, you know, all the different ways that you can get out there more. But really, it's about once you are found, doesn't matter how many people find you, if that problem, solution, uniqueness thing isn't sorted out, then people are just going to look at it and go, next one, next one, next one. So it's about that hook. It's about showing people exactly who the show's for, so that when they look at the problem, they go, that's exactly who it's for. This is definitely a show for me. This is a problem that I'm having right now, and this show is going to solve it. And that is why I'm going to invest time in listening to the first few episodes, which will then get me hooked, and that will get me, you know, that'll be me there forever. I'll be a fan forever.
I love that. And that's something, you know, we advocate for that strongly, that idea of something that's so obvious. Listen to what your audience are saying, and then use their language that they use to describe their problems back to them in your titles, in your content, whether it's a podcast or a blog. I know when we were first planning out the podcast in particular, it was all based on questions, but about half of them were questions we just wrote down as these are probably some of the main things we should address. But actually, through our Facebook group, and a free Facebook group is a great way of basically assembling your own little focus group. You know, we're seeing people post and tell us daily what they're struggling with the most, what they, what knowledge gaps they have, what solutions they're needing. And that's just endless fodder for podcast ideas, blog ideas, membership content ideas. And it's something that you would think would be really obvious, but a lot of people don't do it.
That's the thing. It's common sense, but it's the whole idea. It's not a podcast for you. It's a podcast for them. And it counts for courses as well. It's not a course for you. It's a course for them. So listen to the people that are demanding the course, that are asking for the course, and put it in their language. That the language thing's the important part, I think. I mean, you probably have a good idea of the problems, but you just don't know how exactly they're stating it. And even you will probably discover some problems you didn't even know, but it's about including that language, those problems that they're saying, and how they're saying it in the title, the description, the intro, so that it just grabs them right away. It grabs their attention.
Yeah, and I can't remember who it is who actually said this or coined this. This idea that if you can describe your audience's problem better than they can themselves, they'll assume that you have the solution.
It builds a huge amount of authority.
Absolutely. Now, sticking with podcasting, one of the things that I find very interesting about what you do with your own podcast, and certainly in seeing you speaking at Content Marketing Academy, is the idea of seasonal podcasts.
Okay, sure.
That seems to be something that has become a much bigger topic or a much more used strategy on the back of successful series like Serial.
Yeah.
Is that something everybody should be aiming to do? Is it an approach or a strategy that is best applied if you have a particular outcome in mind? Or is it just a gimmick or a novelty?
No, I think it's something that can work for anyone, and it's much more than just a gimmick. It's got a huge amount of benefits. And it ties really well into the courses as well. So the fact that we're talking about that too. So the thing with seasons is that I started doing seasons in the first place because it was from a course building mentality. It was because I'd come out of education. It's because the first podcast series that I ever created was Podcraft, which is our show about teaching podcasting. And I created the first season of that as a course for lecturers at university. That was how I started podcasting, basically. So I taught it I created the first 10 episodes of that show as a course to releasing your first episode. So it was just everything or the minimum they needed to know to get their first episode out there from, choosing a microphone, getting your environment, creating a script, that kind of stuff. So it was just thinking about it in a basic way. Again, breaking it right down, like I said at the start, breaking it right down to the simplest possible way to get that first episode out there, because that was their aim. They're not thinking about 1,000 listeners, 5,000 listeners. They're not thinking about high quality. All their aim is at that point is release an episode of the podcast. So I broke that course down to the simplest possible way to get from zero podcast to one podcast episode. Yeah. So that's how that season approach started. And that ties into a few of the benefits, which is you have a really big aim towards the end of the series. So it's a huge hook for people to follow you on. Like, when you're podcasting about a different thing every single week, there's no massive benefit for people coming back every single week. They might like you, they might want to come and listen to the content. You'll be given good value every week, sure. But I mean, if they miss a week, it's like, well, never mind, I'll catch up next week. Whereas if you're doing a season, which all ties together, then suddenly they've got a much bigger incentive to come back week in, week out. Building on that, another thing is that they get a lot more success out of it because they actually do that. They build up every single week. They're building their knowledge. They're hopefully doing an activity as well. I'll come back to that. That's something that's really important with courses particularly. So you're putting an activity in each one. So they're actually doing something after every single episode. It's building momentum every single time. And hopefully by the end of that season, they've achieved something in their real life, like in their work, in their life, in the person, whatever it is that you're teaching, they've achieved something. And that achievement is what makes them, or what builds in their mind, the perception that you are damn good at what you do. Because it doesn't matter how great you are at describing things, but teaching theory, all that kind of stuff. If you don't help them actually succeed with something, just something basic, then they're just it's not going to build that engagement. It's not going to build that authority that you want to build, because they need to achieve something to build that. So yeah, that whole achievement thing's great. There's other stuff as well around seasons in terms of planning to help you. If you plan out a season ahead of time, say it's a 12 episode season, then you spend maybe an hour doing that. Say the 1st of January, you spend an hour planning out that season, and then suddenly you've got a plan for your content for the next 3 months. So that's like an episode a week for the next 3 months. That's all planned. All you have to do is sit down each week and record. Or, of course, you can batch it. So you could record like 3 or 4 at a time and save even more time as well. And there's even the motivation for you around the fact that you feel that you're building towards an aim at the end of the season. You feel like you're building towards completing something, creating this great resource, which is that podcast season that you can point people back towards. It's this evergreen resource that you're always going to have there. And you can have a break at the end of it too. So you can take a few weeks off if you want, because it just has that natural little delineation. And final thing, is that a season, I talked about the evergreen content. You're creating this season of content, which is, 12 episodes all tied together, basically forms a course. Now that can be turned into all sorts of other great stuff.
Yeah.
Like you can turn it into an audiobook, or hopefully you've been, writing blog summaries of each one. So suddenly those blog summaries of each chapter could be a chapter of a book. So, you've got an ebook out of that. Or you've got an email course. You can point people towards the podcast, the blog posts, the video summaries that you've put maybe together as well. And suddenly you've got this email course you can point people towards. Or something that we did was actually turn them into a full-blown proper online course like we've been talking about. So that first season of Podcraft, sorry, you can tell I like this, that first season of Podcraft turned into our first and our current flagship course, because I took the structure of that course, I built in how-tos, I built in videos, I built in activities, tasks, I built in all the things that are needed in a full course. But that first season of Podcraft was the basis for that course, and it gave me such a step up in starting to create that course. So, you know, if you're out there thinking, oh, I don't know, it's such a big task to create a course, then just start planning it into your basic content delivery each week, and suddenly you've got the starter from which it's much more easy to build.
Yeah, and it's funny when you talk about taking a podcast series or season and turning that into an email course or into an ebook.
Yeah.
We're actually, like right now, it's up on my whiteboard in front of me.
Cool.
We're looking at doing the reverse of that, in that we, like one of the things we did very early on, which helped us really explore our list building, was an email course. It was a 30-day email challenge. Where it was, you know, build and launch your membership in just 30 days.
Yeah,
so we're going the reverse of that, but still same principle of, you know, not just creating individual bits of content that only live within that bit of content, but looking for ways to multipurpose and repurpose stuff. So we're turning that into an actual printed book. Mm-hmm. It's already available as a PDF, and one of the big things I want to do is actually sit down and record that, because it breaks up nicely into 30 daily lessons, and then possibly releasing that as a podcast series as well.
Great stuff. I think it's the only way people can make it work these days, compete with sort of bigger companies, especially if you're kind of new to this, is thinking really smartly about how you can repurpose every single thing you do. I don't mean duplication. I think repurposing has a bad rep, basically. People think of it as just, you know, getting one thing and posting it everywhere, copying it everywhere, which is useless. But it's about getting one bit of content. So you've got one thing you want to teach, one content idea, breaking that down, seeing if you can create a season out of it, breaking it down into those, you know, single lessons that I talked about earlier, going deep rather than wide in each single one, then tailoring it for the medium. So, you know, the podcast episode is going to be quite long. It's going to be the long form, but you might be able to take highlights out of that, or even break down the podcast episode into 4 or 5 videos to repurpose it to video. And then, you know, create a blog post based on that. So you've come up with the content idea. You've come up with a lesson. You'll have created a bullet point plan for your podcast, at least. That takes a lot of the effort out of creating a blog post. So create a good quality blog post based on that plan. You can write a blog post in half the time it would normally if you've just recorded a podcast episode, you've got a plan for it already. So do that. And then suddenly all these things can turn into, like you say, ebooks and email courses and all that kind of stuff. It's the only way to do it. And it ties into discoverability as well, because we talked about that. The fact that the podcast is, you know, that engagement pinnacle, that's where you want to get people to, because that's where they turn into fanatical fans who are either going to refer you to others, promote you for yourself, or buy your stuff. But they're only going to get to that podcast if you catch them through the wider search areas of, you know, text search or video search. So having all of that together in a way that, you know, leads people from the blog post to the video to the podcast, that's how you get discovered as well. Never mind, just be prolific, appear everywhere that people can find you.
Love it. Love it. Now, I know that you're planning on launching your own membership in the future. You touched on that a little earlier.
Yeah, sure.
And you're going through the planning process. Now, given your level of knowledge and experience around online education, what is it that inspired you to move towards a membership model rather than continuing creating one-off courses or, you know, as an accompaniment? What in particular about the membership model from an online education point of view appeals to you the most?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the big thing for me is the fact that you have people's attention over a much longer period of time. So you can affect a lot more change. You can encourage much more success. So for example, we've been selling our courses one off up till now. So people just come to our website, they buy the course, they go in there, I'm confident it's really good quality stuff, but I don't really see the results. And the results aren't half as good because people are just in there themselves. They're just working through self-study. And with the best will in the world, the completion rate of self-study courses is horrendous. It's like all the MOOCs out there just now, there's a load of research around this at the moment. Like the completion rates on some of the massive courses that are run by full-on universities, like people with massive resources, huge reputation, and it's still something like 10, 15, 20% completion rates of the people sign up. So it's just horrendous. So I'm planning to put into action a lot of the stuff that I've been talking about already around, you know, designing it, breaking it down, all that stuff, multimedia for the right areas. But the big thing for me is the action. So the big thing for me is that I want to create a membership site which has lots of learning resources in there, but there's a lot more structure as well. Mm. And I think a lot of people are afraid of that structure. A lot of people think that a lot of people delivering courses, delivering membership sites for me, shy away from giving direction because they feel like people, the benefit of online, the benefit of, you know, learning digitally is that people can be flexible. They can learn when and where they want. But the problem of flexible learning is that you're also free to give it up and just not bother and watch the telly instead. And that was a big part of the research that I did in my PhD was around how you increase completion rates, how you increase success. And one of the biggest, and to be honest, kind of common sense things that came out of it was that if you set somebody a very small task every single day, and I mean every single day, I mean Monday to Friday, well, not including weekends, we'll give them a couple of days off. So you set them a single task every single day that only takes maybe 20 minutes to do, maybe even less, maybe even 5 to 10 minutes. Then if you can encourage them to stick with that for a week or 2 weeks, then they get in the habit of it.
Yeah.
And it becomes a routine. And the barriers are so much lower because they can get in there and they can just do it quickly on a little coffee break, something like that. And there's a bunch of benefits here. Barriers are lower, so that's easy. They get in there. But they start to build momentum. They build that habit. They start to build this sense of achievement because they feel like they're progressing because you can gamify it a little bit. You know, even just with a simple tick box, that's just a little bit of gamification that shows them they're completing things as they go. They're achieving, they're building something. So it's that structure. That's what I want to build into what I'm doing. And I'm thinking about a bunch of different ways to do it. So there'll be that simple stuff like gamification, drip feeding, say, so that, you know, that's a tried and tested method. You drip feed somebody a course. But I also want to do a lot more group challenges. I want to do a lot more talk courses. So say we're going to go through this course over the next 2 months and we're going to do these assignments, like actually set homework and assignments and stuff like that. And I realize this is going to be a lot more work. I realize that a lot of people are not going to do it because a lot of people do want to just do self-study. Not going to get them. But I think that going by my experience in the past with higher education, research, all that kind of stuff, and the problems that I see with current courses, current membership sites of just, you know, lack of engagement, I think that there'll be a big proportion of people will buy into this and they'll see the results that they're getting and they'll start telling other people. And I'll have a lot more people in the site that are achieving success, that are achieving great things. And that's going to be testimonials for the site. There's going to be great people in there that are helping other folk that are in the community as well. So I'm hoping that sort of routine, habit, accountability, structure, all of those types of approaches are going to help me differentiate and, you know, create a lot of successful people.
I love the sound of that. And we'll have to get you back on, like, once your membership's been up and running 6 to 12 months take the temperature of how that's gone. I think leaving people to their own devices ticks a box for them in terms of, you know, not most people don't want homework or don't want to have to do the work, but actually if they're not going to do the work, they're not going to get the results.
Yeah.
Which is going to, you know, helping people get those results is what builds up the goodwill that keeps people subscribed long beyond the point at which they actually need your material.
Yeah,
exactly. And creating advocates and success stories and case studies that you can then leverage to promote your membership. I mean, that can be gold dust for the longevity of a membership site. So it'll be great to actually to watch how things progress with your membership.
Right, yeah, cool. No, I can't wait. I'm going through all the tech stuff right now, so I'm sure I'll be calling you afterwards to I get this one? What's the, I have no idea what.
So actually, you may have just answered my next question. Being in that planning stage, what would you say is the biggest challenge that you're facing now with your membership?
Actually, I mean, the tech is a challenge, but to be honest, I have a bit of experience there anyway, so I'm not too worried about it. The challenge for me right now is actually figuring out the target, because I talked to later on about the design-led approach, like figuring out your avatar, making sure I know that problem solution. I'm worried a little bit at the moment that that what I want to teach applies to so much more than just podcasting. Mm. So I kind of want to get out of just the podcasting niche, but that is what we do right now. That's what the podcast host is focused on. That's what our audience wants. So I'm struggling right now to think of how I target it, because I don't know exactly what I think we're going to start with podcasting, but I want to talk about how to tie it in with video. I want to talk about how to tie it in with blogging, how all of those three content mediums tie together. I think our aim really is much more about, it's about creating a fan. Mm. It's about how you create from a casual visitor to whatever medium it is to being a complete and utter fanatical fan of what you do. That is what I want to teach. But I realize that concept is quite different from what our site's targeting is.
A podcasting membership.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's my struggle at the moment, is figuring out how I tie those two things together.
But I think, the focus of your current site and of the current business, you know, that gives a strong enough bridge into the broader topic, I think, to enable you to do that without there being a disconnect, I feel, with your audience, because what are the chances that your current audience are only using podcasting?
Yeah, slim to none. Yeah. Do you know what? Actually, that was, again, design-led. I was planning to do a survey to my mailing list and put it up on the site for a few days as well, just asking people what else they do. So I'm going to say, you are obviously a podcaster, you're interested in this subject, but do you also do video? Do you do blogging? Do you do social media? What social media do you do? So I want to get a picture of what our target audience is doing right now, and that'll hopefully give me a better steer on that problem I just described.
Yeah, and the thing is as well with the podcasting is, even if your entire audience are only doing podcasting, that gives you the first stage of the journey you then want to take them on. So you know, if you go on the assumption that actually a large proportion of your audience are coming in only doing podcasting and they want to know how to get more from that as well as how to add other elements, then that gives you that roadmap between where they are now and where you want to take them. And I love, you know, the whole idea of creating fans. I'm a big I love the whole Kevin Kelly theory and ideas. The 1,000 True Fans, I think, is something that if you really like embrace that mindset, can totally change your approach to business.
I think sorry to interrupt, but I think podcasting is the most effective way to do that as well, to create those true fans. So yeah, it totally ties into that Kevin Kelly thing, bringing them from blogs, videos to a podcast, which really creates them into that fanatical true fan.
Love that. So before we wrap up, loads of big golden nuggets there, lots of advice I'm sure our listeners will be scribbling down, and they'll be going back to their memberships and creating audios and creating their texts and looking for ways to improve podcasting and all sorts. But if there's just one thing that our listeners could take away from this episode, what would you want that to be?
I think the biggest thing is activities. I think if we're talking, do you know what? It could be either podcasts or courses. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing for me that people miss in a course is that they just put out the content and they don't ask people to do anything. So there's so many courses out there, you'll just be watching through the videos and it'll say, this is how you do something, and that is it. The best way, one of the most effective ways you can get a grown-up person, so adult learning science here, one of the most effective ways you can get an adult to learn something effectively and like you better as a result, trust you more as a result, is if you give them something to do in their real life. Yeah. So say I'm teaching podcasting. So to go back to that first season of Podcraft, I was teaching lecturers how to release a first episode. So my episode on scripting, say, at the end of that episode, I would say, so spend 5 minutes now and create a bullet point script for your next episode, for your first episode. Go away and do that right now. Here's a couple of tips on how to do it. Here's some resources on how to do it. But that is your task right now, is to just sit down for nothing more than 5 minutes and just create, you know, 5 to 10 bullet points of what you're going to talk about on your episode. And it's so powerful when you do that, because if they go and do it, which if you do it right, then, and you make it simple enough and you make it directed enough, then there's a good chance they will, then they'll go and do it. And they've actually achieved something real. It's not just theoretical. It's not just you've taught them some theory and you've got them to do a little practice task. They've done something that's actually useful to them in their real life and their real work. And that little sense of achievement is gold for your engagement, and that is what makes them come back next time, makes them trust you more, makes them like you more. That's what turns them into fans. So make sure every single time you're putting out a bit of content, whether it's a lesson on a course, whether it's a podcast episode, at the end of that bit of content, ask them something, get them to do a task, give them something short to do in the real life that will give them just that little bit, that little hit of achievement.
Awesome advice. That's great. And actually implementing that advice right now, we're going to give our listeners an activity to do.
Perfect.
You need to go and check out thepodcasthost.com. What else should they be doing to find out a bit more about you, to learn more about what we're talking about here, and to tune into your podcast, check out your courses and so on?
Cool. Yeah, no, I mean, thepodcasthost.com is where they can find all of our stuff, whether it's the paid courses or whether it's all our free material. Tons of stuff on the blog there about how to run a podcast. Probably the first stop I tend to send most people to is an email course. Actually, it stems from that first season of Podcraft that I was talking about, which is basically aimed at you getting your first episode out. So if you go to thepodcasthost.com/e-course, then that will take you to the sign-up page for that email course and take you through the whole thing.
Awesome. So there you go. That's the homework for tonight. Colin, thanks so much for joining me on the show. It's been great having you on. I've really enjoyed your insights into just how to make your educational content more effective, which I think, you know, moving away from podcast courses and whatever, that I feel has been the overall theme of what we're talking about here. And I know that we'll certainly be making some little tweaks as well to some of our own stuff, and hopefully our listeners will too. Thanks for coming on the show. Been a pleasure having you on.
It's been great. Thanks very much for the invite, and I just love the stuff you guys are doing over there too. Your courses are really good quality. So
thank you.
So yeah, thanks again, Mike. Cheers.
Cheers, Colin. Thanks again to Colin for coming on to the Membership Guys podcast. I don't know about you guys, but I really enjoyed that conversation. So much actionable stuff, so much gold there that we can all take away and improve our content with. And in true fashion of what Colin said, I'm actually going to implement one of his biggest pieces of advice that he said is the golden nugget, the one thing he'd like everyone to take away from that podcast, and that is to give your audience activities. So here is an activity for you. I want you, if you're listening to this, to do one thing to improve an existing piece of content. It could be a blog post, could be a podcast episode, or it could be your membership content. I want you to make one improvement to that content. So that may be adding some activities into it. It may be taking your most popular course within your membership and stripping out the audio and then offering that as an additional option to your users. Or maybe it's taking an ebook that you've written or a series of blog posts that you've written and recording an audio version of that that you'll release as a podcast series. So decide on one thing that you're going to do on the back of Colin's advice in this podcast, and then I want you to either tweet me at Membership Guys on Twitter or to jump into our free Facebook group for membership site owners at talkmemberships.com and let me know what change you're going to make on the back of this podcast, and then I'll hold you accountable. I'll keep track of that, and I'll check in with you to see how the change has gone, and more importantly, see what sort of results that you're getting when you make those improvements with your content. So that's my challenge to you. That's your homework on the back of this episode. I look forward to hearing from you in what you're doing to improve your educational content, implementing the advice from Colin Gray on today's episode. That's it from me for another week. Thanks once again for choosing to spend a little bit of time with us. Thanks again to Colin for coming on the show. Really do hope you've enjoyed it. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback. Let us know on social media. Pop a little review into iTunes. Let us know what you think of the show. I'll be back again very soon with another episode of the Membership Guys podcast. If you've enjoyed today's episode of the Membership Guys podcast, we invite you to check out the membersiteacademy.com. The Membersite Academy is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of starting, growing, and running a membership website. So whether you're still figuring out what your idea is going to be, or whether your website is already up and running and you're just looking for ways to grow it and attract new members, then the Membersite Academy can help you to get to the next level. With our extensive course library, monthly training, exclusive member-only discounts, perks and tools, and a supportive, active community to help you along the way with feedback, encouragement and advice, the Membersite Academy is the perfect place to be for anyone looking to start, manage and grow a successful membership website. So check it out at membersiteacademy.com.